We're going to turn it into like a musical podcast.
We are now a musical podcast.
Yes.
Sorry. I could be brown. I could be blue. I could be violet sky. Oh, my God.
I can't do Will Ferrell's part.
Oh, my God. I can't stop watching it, though.
I know. It's the greatest. Well, you just showed it to me. And
I did.
Now I feel like it's going to be my pick-me-up video whenever I'm feeling blue.
I've watched it so many times.
You should tell people what we're talking about in case they haven't seen it.
Yeah. I did a terrible, regrettable thing that I would like to undo, but I'm not sure I will. And I downloaded TikTok. I don't like that at all. I feel ashamed of myself.
Stop shaming yourself.
No, but I don't. It's just such a fucking time suck. I should have gone to sleep like an hour and a half earlier than I did last night.
But then you wouldn't have discovered the Ryan Reynolds Will Ferrell video.
I saw that a few days ago on Instagram because people just port that shit over to Instagram Reels.
Just shared it with me?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
How dare you?
I know. I'm sorry. Anyway, there is some particular TikTok trend where people are layering harmonies of vocals, looping it, singing the first thing, and then layering the second one, and then the third one, of an old Grace Kelly song, I think.
Yeah, that's news to me.
Yeah, I didn't know that song or know that it was her, but the first one I saw was Ryan Reynolds, and Will Ferrell makes an appearance, and it is the most joyful thing
hilarious
I've seen ever.
Yeah.
It makes me really happy.
You know what else made me really happy?
What's that?
Watching the Emmys last night and seeing the cast of Schitt's Creek. They did this bit where they pretended there was nothing on the prompter for them. Mm-hmm. And it was a joke.
Right.
But people actually believe them because they're so good.
They were so good at their dynamic character.
And so I was looking at Twitter after the Emmys, and there were people who still were like, oh, I feel so bad for the cast of Schitt's Creek. Of course, the prompter went out. And then, of course, there's other people that are like, no surprise that the Schitt's Creek crew had the best bit of the Grammys.
Right.
But it was so good to see all of them.
Not the Grammys. That's what I'm going to win.
Sorry, the Emmys.
That's different.
I can't believe I said the Grammys. I don't know, man.
You're usually so up on your pop culture.
Yeah, I know, I am. I've only had one glass of Prosecco, too.
I did not watch the Emmys last night because I was watching Only Murders in the Building on Hulu with Steve Martin and Martin Short and Selena Gomez, and I love it. It is so good.
I can see your dedication to it all over your face.
Whee!
That sounds good, and I like the title.
It's great. It's about them starting a true crime podcast.
Oh, really?
Yes. I didn't know that when I got into it.
I didn't know that's what it was about either.
Okay.
Now that we're caught up.
What are we talking about today?
This was kind of my idea. I wanted to talk about this whole convenience culture that we have going on here with...
America.
With America. How different everything is even from 5 years ago, much less 10 years ago, much less how we were growing up. You know, just how easy and convenient it is to get things that you need as part of your daily life or just for pleasure, right? Mm-hmm. And we have joked before. What have you said? I'm not lazy. I'm just highly motivated by convenience.
Fucking right. I stand by that.
Sure, everyone is. And that's the thing. Everyone is highly motivated by convenience and people mm-hmm. are willing to pay a premium for convenience. It's kind of disrupted industries.
Yeah.
The taxi industry or the restaurant industry. There's lots of ways that we use technology or innovation to disrupt the way that we've always done things, the way that we've always known things.
To make things faster and better and stronger. And
right.
Yeah.
And there's a component to that that is destructive, mm-hmm. not only to a variety of industries, but to our planet, which
Absolutely.
We'll talk about a little bit. But I think there's also a really positive component to it. Like, for example, the pandemic, when people were sheltering in place. Maybe if you're a high risk, it is safer for you to have groceries delivered than go to the grocery store mm-hmm. or not in a pandemic, but you're elderly and you shouldn't be driving. You can take an Uber or have food delivered to you. So I don't think it's all bad, but it's just so different. It's hard for me to explain to my kids how different my childhood was compared to theirs.
Yeah.
We're at that age where we didn't really have cell phones till like college.
Yeah.
I didn't have my own computer until I was in college or maybe even post-college. The difference between our parents' childhood and our childhood There are some substantial differences, but it's nothing compared to how our childhood differs from our kids' childhood.
Yeah, there was a whole technological revolution in between.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's like nostalgia or it just blows my mind thinking about how things were when we were kids and how things are even compared to 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder, is this a positive thing? Is it going to keep changing?
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
You know what? That's a good idea. We should start a podcast.
Just to wax on about these kinds of things.
We touched on this a little bit in our episode about agoraphobia when we talked about how necessary it was to have all those things delivered to you. But then it also can enable more of that, like in coming out of the pandemic might be harder for people who have now gotten used to being so isolated. And we've kind of covered all that.
And you know, I should make a clarifying point. When I said it's so different, our childhoods compared to our kids because of this technological revolution, that's true. But the concept of favor and convenience is not. One of these articles is from the website Eco and Beyond. It's called The True Cost of Convenience Culture. And it talks about convenience with food starting in the 1950s.
Yeah.
And it's talking about like TV dinners and tin cans of food and those things that were kind of new at that time. This is hilarious. It says, these and items such as prepackaged cake mix were cleverly marketed to the, quote, modern housewife with taglines such as, I'm late, but dinner won't be.
Ugh. You know what else has also come a long way since then? Feminism.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, and then it says, newfangled futuristic inventions such as the microwave oven came on the scene. At that time, the savvy housewife was one who could nuke up a nutritious and delicious meal of Spam and tinned peas for her family.
Who decided that was delicious, by the way?
Or nutritious.
Ugh.
That was the convenience of that time.
Yeah.
So the busy housewife, who the fuck knows what she was out and about doing or who she was out and about doing.
Hopefully somebody that treated her well.
Or didn't expect her to have dinner on the table when he walked in the door.
Right. Ah, the 50s. I will say that I have spent a fair amount of time thinking about this, less time doing anything about it as of yet, but that I want to be able to cook more, but I need it to be fast and easy. I actually was just considering one of those, the meal kit delivery services.
Oh, right.
A friend had a coupon for a free first box to this service.
Mm-hmm.
And I've thought about it before and I like the idea, but it doesn't make sense for me and my family because, you know, my household is me and my two kids and they don't eat food. So
what do they eat, Michelle?
They have very limited, frustrating diets. And so I either make two different meals and I just eat one of the things that one of them will eat,
mm-hmm.
or I make three different meals, or I order pizza.
Which is a convenience.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And expensive. You pay for that convenience too. But I found myself really contemplating this again, like, okay, I've thought about it before. I came to the conclusion it wasn't for me really. I don't need this. But maybe, I mean, I like the idea of the variety and I can get a meal for two or for four and have leftovers. I like to cook like that anyway. And I just can't bring myself to do it. And part of that is, you know, and we'll get into this, but thinking about the environmental cost where there's just more and more packaging involved in everything. All of these convenience things mm-hmm. involve packaging and they're for the most part single-use packaging. You know, a lot of that is recyclable, but most cities, the recycling program, I think they can recycle like 10% of what actually gets put in there.
Which really sucks,
yeah.
Given how much time we spend separating here in Seattle anyway, recycling from our compost, from our trash.
Yeah, I am so trained to do it and to the point where if somebody doesn't do it, I don't like go through other people's trash to fix it. But I definitely, if I'm standing right there with somebody or if I see my daughter put something in the trash that should go in the recycling, I'll be like, hey, where does that go?
Yeah, you've done that to me before.
Sorry.
Actually, what you've done to me is I'll try to recycle something and you'll be like, that can't go in there. That has to go in the trash.
Oh, yeah. Well, because I've actually taken the time to figure out what that's supposed to be. And unfortunately, the result of that isn't what you'd hope.
When my family comes to visit me, like my sister and her husband were just here the other day, they just leave their garbage or whatever on the counter because they're like, we don't know what to do with that. because we're going to put it in the wrong thing. Yeah. So can we just leave this here and
other parts of the country?
My daughter's like, I got it. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Speaking of the single-use packaging, you know, we get a lot of that even just in the stuff we buy at the grocery store.
Yeah.
But we read a lot of articles that talk about the cost of convenience to the environment. And one of them that was on the Maxim Institute's website.
Which, by the way, sorry, is not related to Maxim magazine. I was confused at first, but it's different.
Yeah, this isn't really an article I'd expect to see in Maxim. But
yeah, not so much.
It's called Convenience Culture Needs to Die by Jackie Dixon. It says, as the great polar explorer Robert Swan said, the greatest threat to our planet is the belief that someone else will save it. So people are doing this, and as they're throwing this stuff away or getting rid of it, they're thinking, this is a lot of trash that's going to end up in a landfill. But they're not motivated enough, I think, most people, to feel that the action of them as one person is going to change that. Or they're too tired, or they're too hungry, or they're too, you know, it's what's available and convenient to them at the time.
Right. So. And that same piece said, and this is so fucking true, companies have a vested interest in feeding our desire for convenience. When their product is easier for us to use or to consume, we're more likely to buy from them.
And that's true for me.
Yeah. You know, we will overlook things like the single-use packaging that we might feel a little bit bad about, but man, we're busy, we're tired, so we're going to buy it anyway and just like throw that bag of chips at the kids or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Something that I talked about with some of my coworkers who like to give me a hard time about my recycling at work. the two of them are both basically like, the world's gonna fucking burn up anyway, so what's the point? I mean, I understand that cynical sentiment because probably, yeah, but when more and more of us have that kind of attitude, then it's obviously going to happen sooner. And I don't know.
Well, you are very much an optimist at
heart. I am. I'm a total idealist.
And you like to be hopeful and idealistic.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that not wanting to talk about the planet is going to burn up and we're all going to die anyway is an idealistic thing, because that's a stretch. But there are a lot of people that I think don't want to be hopeful or optimistic because they have already evaluated it in their own mind and decided we're fucked.
Well, maybe. Cynicism can lead to apathy. And if it's a person, then it doesn't matter. But if it's enough people, then it does.
Like a country, when Trump decided the United States wasn't going to participate in, you know, climate change reduction efforts and things like that.
Yeah, like that. But also, I really fucking reject the idea. And I hear this argument about a lot of things, you know, because I am idealistic, I will propose, I think, maybe loftier goals than are even close to realistic. But what's behind them for me is the idea that there is something better out there rather than what we have now. There's that saying, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Mm-hmm.
There's no fucking reason why we can't take small steps towards something good just because it won't immediately get us to ideal. So I see the value in all of the small things that people can do to contribute. And if everybody does small things, it fucking adds up.
The key word there is everybody.
Well, I know. You know, and that's sort of why I'm so, I'm just going to say militant about these things myself, but that's not really right. But because I do see people who genuinely feel that cynicism or that apathy. And so I try to pick up slack for others.
What? I'm just going to play devil's advocate for a minute. So what would you say to somebody who said, good on you for putting all of that stuff in recycling, but isn't it you that bought all those different packages at the store?
I recognize the hypocrisy for sure. And I am currently thinking a lot about it and taking some steps to rectify that for myself a little bit. You know, and have seen, I bought a bunch of resealable silicone baggies for kids' lunches and stuff that aren't the single-use plastic. And that means I have to wash them by hand. It's not convenient, but it felt like something that I could do. I am drinking a hell of a lot more regular water and not buying the cans as much anymore. And like, I'm not doing any of that in judgment of anybody else. It's just because I can feel you there.
That's a fine looking high horse.
Yeah, well, no.
That's from our last episode.
I can feel you over there thinking that I'm judging you for doing those things. It just feels like—
I don't think you're judging me at
all. Okay, good. It just feels like something that I can do.
Yeah, I just wasn't aware that you were doing those things to try to save the planet. I thought you said before that you were just drinking more regular water for your health.
Yes, the water started that way because I got this water bottle that I love. And that was a little added bonus.
You're saying it's for cans.
I'm not saying that's why I got it. I did get the bags for that reason, though. Here's the thing, is that it doesn't have to be all one thing, right? There's nuance here. It's not, I only got this to drink more water. I recognize that drinking out of a water bottle is better for the world.
Okay.
There's multiple reasons. So I read some statistics that are truly gross. Let's see. 10 million tons of plastic are dumped in our oceans every year. 1 million marine animals are killed by plastic pollution every year. By 2050, if anybody's counting, less than 30 years away, there will be more plastic than fish in the oceans.
Gross.
And let's see. This is the best part. Ready? Humans eat over 40 pounds of plastic in their lifetime.
In what?
Anything that comes out of the water, I guess. I don't know. It says 100% of mussels that were tested have contained microplastics.
Interesting.
100%. So you get that nice little white wine, butter broth, plate of mussels at the restaurant. Enjoy
your
plastic.
Now I feel like I know where cancer comes from.
Seriously, it can't be good for our health. And I mean, this sounds like I'm up on a fucking high horse, and I genuinely understand the hypocrisy of the lifestyle that I live. And yes, I order from Amazon way too fucking much, but I'm starting to try to pay attention to it and think about it, which is all I think anybody can do, at least to start.
It's a start, for sure. I am the type of person who tries to be really careful about making like declaratory statements if I feel like I'm being hypocritical in any way. And I know that I fully subscribe to this lifestyle of convenience. It doesn't mean I don't give a shit about what's happening to our planet, but I know that I'm weak in that in the moment, I'm going to get that can of sparkling water, not go fill up a glass because it's better for the environment.
We all are. I'm working really hard on the concept of and instead of but, that two things can be true at the same time. You can recognize and state definitively that all of this shit is bad for the environment and also acknowledge that you do it too. Because both of those things are true. It doesn't mean you can't say it.
No, I did just say it.
No, I know, but you're saying you try not to make the declarative statements because of the hypocrisy.
I'm trying not to imply or indicate that I'm personally taking steps to...
I'm not trying to preach anything here either.
Yeah.
I don't want the world to be burned up in 30 years is all.
Me neither. But I don't feel like I personally am living a lifestyle that is going to prevent that because I, like many others, are just buying into ordering shit off Amazon, getting shit that comes in a bunch of packages at the grocery store, you know, ordering pizza, like getting a plastic cup of coffee at Starbucks or whatever, anything that could be attributable, I'm doing it.
Oh, yeah.
So I can't say, well, I'm doing these three or four things, and so therefore I'm not in that category of people, because I am. I'm putting myself there.
That's what I'm saying, though, is I don't think I'm not taking myself out of that category by also doing these things and just thinking about it. I don't know. I'm just trying to examine it. Even if it starts with just thinking about what you can do, because the more you think about it, the more likely you are to think about it, right?
You know, you were talking about the meal delivery boxes. There's so many of them now. For me, my issue with that is...
You still have to cook.
It sounds good conceptually, but I know that I'm going to do the first four boxes, like, faithfully, and then it's going to fall off. That shit's going to sit in the fridge, or oops, we didn't make that one, or oops, we were busy this week, or whatever. I am not good at the consistency...
Oh, I hear that.
...of lifestyle changes in general, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
if I say, for example, you're doing a great job drinking more water right now.
The one thing I can do.
I will get on a I'm going to drink more water kick, and I'll drink more water for 2 weeks, and then I just fucking go back to my old ways, you know?
I hear that.
That is why a lot of the shit that I've done that we've talked about that's motivated by convenience is shit that's permanent. And this is not food related, but we've talked about laser hair removal or getting my eyeliner tattooed on or shit that's permanent, or at least for the next several years. It's done. I don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't have to worry about it. Whereas if it's something that I still have to maintain and keep up, I'm going to fall off the wagon.
Yes, so. That's why they make fake plastic plants. And
right. I have some of those.
I know. So speaking of Amazon and the far too many packages that I get at my house, I don't know about how many you get, but...
Not as many as you.
It's
probably about half as much, which is still a lot.
Yeah, and I feel guilty about it. I have the cognitive dissonance. It's strong because I keep doing it, even though I know that I don't want to keep doing it.
But like, it's
not good.
That convenience factor is so, like, for example, it's my daughter's birthday this week. We had a really busy weekend, so I didn't have a chance to go pick up the things I was planning on picking up. What did I do today? I got on Amazon and ordered it on Prime, so it would be here
real
in
fast.
Time. I think I knew in the back of my mind that I had that convenient option if I needed it. And I did. And you know what? At the time, I was like, this is fucking great. I'm just taking care of this on a 5-minute break from work right now. Click, 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 done.
Yep. And I do it far too often because it is so damn easy. So I order all that stuff and then I feel bad about it. Not like buyer's remorse or anything, but...
When do you feel bad? Like after you've hit purchase, when it arrives?
All throughout, because I know that the more I do that, the more everyone does that, the less opportunity there is for small business, local business to succeed. And it's like everyone involved every step of the way is set up to fail because this giant corporation just owns the entire system, which again... is highly convenient, but sucks. Mm-hmm. It sucks. I tried, at least early on during the pandemic, to order from local, like a local bookstore, you know, getting my kids new books and not ordering them from Amazon and stuff like that. But everything takes longer and it tends to be more expensive and it just, it didn't stick. And I wish that it did. And I want to be that person who like goes to the market and buys the stuff and, you know, goes to the local shop.
Well, our lifestyle is just so fast paced now.
I know. I think about You've Got Mail, right? She had the Shop Around the Corner or whatever it was called. That was based on Shop Around the Corner, I think. But whatever her little shop was called. And then Fox's Books or whatever put it out of business because she was just this little bookseller that couldn't keep up, right?
Right.
Same shit. That happens all the time, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm contributing to it and I feel icky about it. And yet I keep
doing it. But you have silicone bags.
I'm trying. Guess where I got those?
Amazon.
100%.
Oh, the irony.
I know. It's a minefield, man.
We're part of the machine.
I know. And they've made it such that it's really difficult to get out of the machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's not impossible. It's difficult, especially with the amount of time and energy and effort that we adults, but women certainly, are required to put in every day to everybody else, into our household, into our kids, into our communities and our families. And there's no time left.
Well, and these companies like Amazon, they know that part of what they're selling is convenience and they are well positioned to be innovative in that regard than the local, you know, mom and pop business or whatever. For example, in my building at work, there's an Amazon Go store.
Yeah.
You scan your app when you walk in, you go in, you take whatever you want off the shelf and you just walk out. And then you get an invoice for your purchases. And I've done this a million times.
Yeah.
And there's never been an error. And it's all
Big Brother.
it's sensors and it's so fucking convenient. Like I can have a conference call that starts in 10 minutes and I haven't eaten lunch and it's 1:30 and I'm starving. I can run down to the Amazon Go store, run in, grab whatever I want to have for lunch, walk out, go back up to my desk and be there in time for that conference call.
Yeah.
I don't have to check out. I don't have to wait in line. I don't have to do anything. That's not buying it online, but that's still buying it from Amazon.
Right.
Because they're finding ways to be innovative, even if it's not online.
Yes, you're right. I will say that a lot of the innovation that we see from these big companies is because they've sort of cannibalized the smaller companies that they are purporting to help.
True. But even if there was like a small market in my office building that I would prefer to frequent, I can't run in there, grab what I need and run out. You know,
I know.
That's not an option.
I know. I'm just saying we can't just laud them for all this innovation when a lot of it comes from. Because part of what Amazon...
I wasn't lauding them. I was just making a point.
No, it's true. Know. Part of what they do is to have these small business third-party sellers go through them. Facebook and Google and all those, they're no different. And what they do is they see, and Amazon's been sued for this, they see that someone's having success with some product or idea, and they're like, oh, okay, we'll do that too. And they can produce it, whatever it is, a lot cheaper and distribute a lot cheaper. And then whoever that small business was is done. They're like, oh, okay, well, we'll go ahead and just make that.
It kind of reminds me of what people say about the small local pharmacies that used to exist that are pretty much going extinct because they've got Walgreens and Walmart and all these big box stores with their pharmacies coming in that are just consuming the little guy.
It's the same in every industry.
Right.
We had a neighborhood pharmacy in the same building that my bar was in. Actually, the pharmacist that had been there since like 1951 was the building owner. When he retired, obviously, somebody else took over the pharmacy, and now that's gone and it's a little gym. But it was the only compounding pharmacy where they could actually mix drugs. If you needed some specific thing that they, you know, Walgreens couldn't order it, it was one of the only compounding pharmacies in the area. I don't know how any of that shit works, but I know that it stayed a lot longer than a lot of those little pharmacies because it had that advantage.
Yeah, there's not many.
No. Mm-mm. Speaking of the bar, one of the huge things that I was trying to get people to understand during the pandemic was that all these food delivery services, which I sometimes use because I don't have time or I'm lazy or whatever, are terrible for the restaurant industry. They charge these restaurants so many fees that they don't end up making much of any money. And the margins are already so low on food that it's really sad. A lot of restaurants, obviously, were going to go out of business with all the lockdowns and everything anyway, but that really contributed.
Am I correct that a lot of restaurants weren't really interested in partnering with those food delivery services because of those fees until the pandemic?
Yes.
And then they kind of felt like they were stuck.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone, Megan's typical first date location is this wonderful little restaurant and bar a couple miles from us. And well, not even a couple miles now for you. You're a lot closer now.
I know. Now I'm probably less than a mile. It's my first date spot.
That's right. I ordered from them so much during the pandemic because they repurposed their staff and did all their own delivery. Mm-hmm. And it was awesome. It just made me so happy to know that they were doing everything they could to keep all their people and not have to use the services and everything. It was awesome. So I love them.
Yeah, they're great. I'm so happy they didn't go under like so many restaurants during the pandemic. Yeah,
we should just go ahead and call them out.
Yeah, it's the Maple. Now, every time someone sees me there, they're going to be like, oh, hey, you on a first date?
You on a date? Yeah, I mean, maybe you are. It's fine. Also, I have to note that they cut a window into the side of their building behind the bar and turned it into a walk-up bar when Seattle decided that it was okay to do to-go liquor during the pandemic. For those of you who have watched Arrested Development, it is a banana stand.
It is a banana stand.
It is banana stand. It literally says the Maple's frozen cocktails, blah, 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 instead of Bluth's frozen bananas. And it's got a little picture of Buster on the side of the railing. I mean, it's just, if you don't watch Arrested Development, you won't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
Well, that sounds funny.
But there's always money in the banana stand, and it's great.
Okay. It was great in the summer when people wanted to keep it outside, could go for a walk, get a cocktail, walk over to the park.
Yeah. Okay. So something that maybe we sort of touched on, but I want to talk about is instant gratification.
Right.
That is something that has been building and building and building for years as more technology has become available and people don't know how to be bored anymore.
Right. I always talk to people at my work who are still there that will tell us about before everyone had computers and email. And you just worked on whatever came in the mail that day. Or like if a fax came through. But everything was paper files over the phone. And I still work with people who remember this.
Right.
This guy who just retired last year, he told me this hilarious story once. He was talking to a customer on the phone. They were like, well, I sent you an email. And he goes, well, what's an email?
Oh,
he didn't even know what it was.
Was it like 1996?
Probably. Yeah. I can only imagine how much slower pace that was. And my colleague, that is a good friend of mine that is a single mom, she's older than me. We talk about how this technology is like a blessing and a curse because when she was raising her kids and they're adults now, she didn't have like a laptop she could bring home and a cell phone to check her email on. So if she worked extra hours, she had to be in the office away from them and figure out like childcare and meals and all that kind of stuff. And she really had a lot to juggle. For me, it's great because I can be home or work from home and I'm always accessible with my laptop or my cell phone or whatever. But then I'm always accessible. Like for her, when she did finally go home, she was home and she couldn't work. You know, everything was at the office. There was nothing she could do until she went back the next day.
Right. So. Well, and we've talked about this before because it's one of my big pet peeves in dating these tech guys, all the nerds that I like, because they end up plugged in constantly. And you do a pretty good job of being done when you're done with your day. And that means you have more to come back to the next day, but you tend to unplug.
I try to. Yeah. If I have a big deal closing or something,
sure,
that's different. But I will often generally wait until the kids are in bed to go back to work
on right it. I applaud you for that because I think that that's pretty rare these days.
Thanks. I'm dateable.
You are dateable. If only you had a penis.
Sorry, man.
I remember my parents saying things to me and my brother about our need for instant gratification back then, mm-hmm. and how, you know, it was different from the way they grew up, obviously. But
right.
It's really interesting. I mean, I know a lot of people, a lot of adults, and the ones that really can't wait for things, they just, whatever it is they want, they need it now. I find it immature.
It blows me away, like when a new iPhone is coming out, how people will get in line and wait in line for hours. They could wait like 3 days and then just walk into a store and get it. Yeah. But they have to have it the second it comes out.
And they wouldn't say that they can't delay their gratification. They would call themselves early adopters. I was married to one.
Which means you can't delay your gratification.
Right. Yeah. Stuff like that, they have these like cult followings that these people are just chomping at the bit constantly for whatever the new thing is that comes out. Mm-hmm. I used to tell my ex that he should be paid for his Apple evangelism. he should be on the payroll.
He and I just spar constantly about mm-hmm. Apple versus Google. And it really comes from like deep inside his soul.
Oh, yeah. He feels very strongly.
I know he does. Mm-hmm. In one of these articles about delayed gratification, there was a line that really struck me. It said, "Delaying gratification isn't a new concept. Back in 300 BC, Aristotle saw that the reason so many people were unhappy was that they confused pleasure for true happiness."
I highlighted that as well.
And I was like, damn, that's true. Because pleasure that you get from instant gratification mm-hmm. or, you know, just something pleasurable.
It's fleeting.
Right. It's not going to carry you.
No. It's a way to avoid pain in the moment.
Right. Which is, it could be true of addicts. They want that pleasure, even if just for a moment, even if it is fleeting, mm-hmm. because it's an escape.
Yeah. They also talked about Freud in that article.
Let me read the second part of this.
Oh, sorry.
"True happiness, according to Aristotle, is about developing habits and surrounding yourself with people who grow your soul. This allows you to move towards your greatest potential. True happiness entails delaying pleasure and putting in the time, discipline, and patience required to achieve a goal instead of feeling good now."
I'm fucking trying, man.
And that is from a Psychology Today article called "The Benefits of Delaying Gratification."
Yeah. That same article says there's a term in Freudian psychoanalysis known as the pleasure principle, which is the instinctual seeking of pleasure and avoidance of pain in order to satisfy biological and psychological needs. According to Freud, the pleasure principle is the driving force guiding the id, the most basic part of ourselves. According to Freud, the id rules the behavior of infants and children by only satisfying the pleasure principle. There is no thinking ahead for greater purpose. And I like this too. Delayed gratification can yield tremendous returns while helping you develop a tolerance for waiting. It's like a muscle. You practice it, it gets stronger, right? Mm-hmm. The more you work on that willpower, the easier it gets.
It's discipline.
Yeah. And it's hard.
This is a silly example, but I'm going to say it anyway. I'll see like a text or an email come in on my phone mm-hmm. while I'm working on something. And instead of dropping what I'm working on, I'll tell myself like, okay, I'm going to finish this email and then I'm going to read these two others that need immediate attention. And then I'll let myself look at my phone.
I do the same thing.
You know? It's like little things like that that you discipline, or like mm-hmm. if you have some kind of treat or something, whether it be like food based or a gift certificate for a massage or something mm-hmm. like that. And you're like, I could use that today, or I could wait 2 weeks and see the therapist I really want to see, or, you know, whatever.
Right.
It feels like having that kind of discipline is not common anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, people used to, it was just part of life. Like you just waited for what you needed or what you wanted. And now people are used to getting what they need and want mm-hmm. right away.
You saved up money to buy that thing that you want
right.
instead of just putting it on credit. You know, again, guilty. Been much better about that in my later adulthood than I was in my early. But
credit is one of the weapons in terms of a negative when you think about convenience, mm-hmm. because credit allows people to conveniently get that thing they want, they have to have right now.
Right. And then, but then that can spiral.
Right.
Even if they do end up paying it off without it spiraling and getting out of control, mm-hmm. if they don't pay it off right away, it ends up costing more than it would have otherwise.
When people have the best intentions, like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm going to pay that off next month when I get a bonus. But then you have like a medical emergency yeah. and you have to throw that money towards totally. That.
Yeah. There's something really, it portrays a strong character to me when people can delay gratification.
I agree. Like how you were saying that it's kind of immature. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think about my kids who are like, I want this thing and I want children. It right now. Right. And I'm like, too bad. If an adult were to say that to me, I really want this and I have to have it right now. Mm-hmm. I would be like, well, are you going to have a tantrum if you don't get it? You know,
my new thing is when I hear I want that or I need that, I'm like, that's nice. Mm-hmm.
I get a lot of lately. It's like, oh, I don't want to go to school. And I'm like, yeah, I hear you. I don't want to go to work either. But I guess we all have to do things we don't want to do today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like the weekend is the ultimate delayed gratification, right?
Yes.
Why does everybody love Saturday and Sunday so much? Because you had to wait, you know, like when you were in school, too fucking bad. You don't want to do this.
Good
you
point.
Have to do it. You have to wait for the weekend.
That's a good fucking point.
Even with shows, you know. Remember how you used to be like, it's Thursday night. I'm going to have like a viewing party and watch the show that before DVR. Anything.
Everybody gathered in the dorm common room and we all watched 90210 together.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was your thing that you got excited for and it was a celebration. Like, yes, it's here. The night is here. Yeah. Now you can fucking binge watch a whole season.
Well, and I get irritated when I'm not able to binge things because they come out a week at a time. Now I'm like, what do you mean there's no more episodes of Ted Lasso? I don't want to wait until next Friday.
Exactly.
I recognize it in myself. And also, I've become fucking conditioned.
Well, I think it's fair to say that not every aspect of convenience is a negative thing.
Certainly not.
And I think that there are some aspects of convenience that are not wasteful, but in fact, save resources.
Like telehealth.
Yeah. Like there's all kinds of things you could point out like that. Yeah. And I especially think for a vulnerable population in terms of access to food and medication and rides, places and things like that, even those things that take more resources are probably a good thing. But if we're talking about being able to watch a TV show that you like anytime you want, I don't really feel like that's hurting anyone, you know?
No, that's sort of the definition of first world problems right there.
Yeah, right.
And I recognize that. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the convenience culture, I guess, is what we've been calling it. It's certainly enticing. Mm-hmm. There are some things about it that are really bad, and there are some things about it that are really great.
Yeah.
And I find that I tend to sort of lean into both the bad and the good because I am a super busy person who is highly motivated by convenience.
Absolutely. I still need to make those shirts. That one is going to be the other picture in my dating profile.
The companion quality. And then
yes.
Your whole dating profile should just be Prosecco Theory shirts.
I think it might need to be.
And then somebody can ask you about it. Okay. And then you'll be like, I don't talk about the podcast.
That's right. No, they don't get to know it.
Mm-mm. I was talking to a guy today who told me that he listens to a podcast every morning. And I instantly was like, oh God, did he find out about my podcast? Is that why he's saying this to me? But surprisingly, there are other people that have podcasts.
What? That's weird. There are several hundred thousand at this point. But I'm happy to say that I randomly checked that Listen Notes website recently, and we are in the top 5% globally.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I think there are many hundreds of thousands of podcasts where somebody did like 5 episodes and 4 people listened and nothing happened with it. So put all them aside and I'm not sure where we'd be, but I'm going to take top 5%. I like it. So thanks, everybody.
Do you think that people who live in more rural areas than we live in don't have as much convenience as we do? Like,
absolutely.
Obviously, streaming services and things like that, they do. But like, I have been in towns where I can't get an Uber because there's like 4 Ubers in the whole town.
Yeah.
And they're either not working or they're busy.
Or places that even, you know, like Amazon doesn't deliver there.
Right.
Absolutely, there are places. We are in a city where we have access to everything. So
that's worth mentioning.
Yeah.
Not everybody is as easily enticed as us because we are not fortunate.
Lazy. Not lazy.
I mean, part of living in a big city, part of the trade-off is that you have access to a lot of resources and healthcare and entertainment. And
that's why I live here.
But, you know, then there's higher crime and a lot of shitty things that you have to deal with.
There's that fucking creepy-ass guy in my neighborhood that people keep posting about who's, like, driving slowly past people walking to school. And I don't like that at all.
Yeah.
But I can get Amazon every day. So
one of my Amazon Prime options is delivery today.
Oh, yeah.
Because we live in Seattle, depending on what it is, we can get shit same day pretty frequently.
Yeah. My son on Saturday asked me if we could get some clay so that he could make a Jack Skellington from Nightmare Before Christmas out of clay.
Aww.
And he had recently been asking me where Amazon was. And so I was trying to describe the company started here. It has big offices and warehouses here, but they're all over the place, blah, blah, blah. So when I said, well, we can order the clay, but it might not get here before you go back to your dad's, but we could do it next time. And he's like, but they're in Seattle. I was like, you're right about that. So
get off your ass and go to the Amazon.
No, he knows they bring things to us.
Okay.
He knows that part, but he couldn't understand why it would take so long when they're in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, buddy, there are millions of people ordering things on Amazon right now. So it's not like they're just sitting there waiting for us to tell them what we want today. So, yeah, it took some time for him to get that, though.
Something I've noticed with my kids, because especially during the pandemic, people who are delivering like pizza or food or whatever, just leave things on your porch for safety and don't interact with you. And then they like text you and say it's here.
Right.
So now they see more unwilling to approach or talk to people that are service providers.
Oh, yeah.
In any industry, you know, because they're kind of out of the habit of like looking people in the eye and saying like, thank you. And it's gotten a lot better in the last couple months. I think especially since school started. Yeah, they're way more willing to interact. But I definitely noticed a regression.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking for people who are big time introverts, they probably just fucking loved that they didn't have to interact with people, you know. And I suppose if you are a very introverted person, which neither of us are,
what?
This lifestyle of convenience could be something that, you know, you love because it reduces your anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of what we've talked about in the agoraphobia episode that we did. But not all people are going to think this convenience thing is bad, that they may feel that it's worth any price to them.
Yeah, maybe. I definitely think that, you know, 18 months of people leaving things on your doorstep and backing away and not going to school and all that stuff has absolutely hurt our kids socially.
Mm-hmm.
Most people probably, but certainly the kids. My daughter already didn't want to talk to anybody. So,
well, and we know people with kids that are nervous about taking off their masks, even if they're 12 or older and they're vaccinated, you know, because now they're just so conditioned to wearing it as a safety measure.
Yeah.
Which, as it turns out, is probably still a good idea. But during that slice of time where we all thought it was okay,
we might be getting out of this
because
bullshit.
You're vaccinated, you can take your mask off. Like, some kids struggled with that more because they were like, I don't know, I like this cloak of protection.
Yeah, I will say that it's nice because then if you like see somebody in the store that you don't want to talk to, it's really easy to hide. But at the same time, it also has made me feel like I'm hiding when I'm not. And so, you know how if like you have your sunglasses on, you'll sort of stare at somebody and they don't know because they can't see your eyes. Like that, except it's my mouth that's covered, not my eyes. And so they can tell. Like, oops, sorry.
It is hard, like for men or women that have short hair and they have a hat on and then their mask, unless you can tell by their, you know, posture or the clothes they wear or whatever. It's not a for sure. You don't want to like yell at the person who like, oh, hey, and then like, oh, never mind.
Oh, I used to do that constantly. My high school days was always like, hey, friend. Nope, don't know you. Never mind. Okay, well, we've maybe beat this to death.
I'm sure we'll come up with more things to talk about.
Oh, probably. I would welcome everyone to just look around and see if you have any thoughts about your consumption. And if you don't, then go about your life. And if you do, do one thing to change it.
Order some silicone bags off Amazon.
From Amazon. Feel good about yourself in one way and terrible in another. Like me.
Oh.
Good stuff.
I applaud your effort.
Thank you. I'm doing something.
She just took a drink out of her water bottle, too.
I love my water bottle.
Hey, there's a...
Is there a spider over my head? Why are you looking at me like that?
It's a halo.
What's happening?
Oh!
It finally arrived. You know where I got it?
Amazon.
Woohoo!
You have that deliver today.
I ordered that one like an hour ago. It showed up just in time. Perfect.
Oh, God. It was probably only like $4 extra, too.
Yeah. Mere $4. Small price to pay for that convenience.
That's right.
Anyway, we're calling it.
Yeah. Let's hang out in the hot tub with friends and then watch some shitty TV.
While we do that, you all, please go to tpublic.com and check out our merch. And find us on Instagram at Prosecco Theory.
Do we even post on Twitter anymore?
I keep forgetting.
Okay.
Well, I'm sorry.
You can find some historical stuff on Twitter.
I'm really bad at the Twitter. I don't twit very well.
You twat.
I don't twat.
No, I'm calling you
a
twat.
I have twat.
We're not tweeting. I don't twat.
Anyway. All right. We are going to go and we love you all. And thank you for coming back to join us again. And Megan, cheers to you, my friend.
Cheers.